FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's November 22nd, 2016. Well, Danielle Park is with us. And Danielle, you got an article running today. And welcome as always. You have an article running today that pretty much recessions after a two-term president are inevitable. And question is it too late to try to head it off? Should the incoming administration head it off? Just let it happen? I mean, whatever happened to recessions having positive benefits for economy, for investing, quelling speculation, doesn't seem to apply anymore. But anyway, it's great to have you back.
Thanks, Kerry. Yeah, well, I think that therein lies the very rub of our collective problems, because politicians are elected to effect miraculous change, which they cannot do in and of themselves, because the conditions that they inherit are the cycle that they find themselves in. So, you know, just like the George Bush had two back-to-back terms and handed off to Obama in 2008, and then fools tried to say it was Obama's recession. Similarly, now, if, you know, a recession occurs in the early in Trump's presidency and fools will try and blame Trump, that will be foolish. But we have this preoccupation constantly as human beings with short-termism and wanting things to only go favorably and asset values to only go up and profits to only expand and to never have any actual weakness or pullback or pay down period. And that is why we keep getting into this disastrous bubble after bubble and busts that follow that are much bigger than if we'd have, you know, allowed them to take place earlier in the cycle. You know, all these central bank interventions, they just billow the thing bigger and it crashes that much harder. So no, I don't think they should try and offset recessions. They're a healthy part of the full business cycle. And I also don't think that they should waste money propping up asset bubbles and pretending like that's doing anything helpful, because it's not.
Yeah, well, we did see upon the conclusion of the election, markets rallying. Is that like an indication, or is that just a relief rally? Like, thank goodness this thing is over. We can get back to business and not talk about this anymore.
So I think a couple of things. I think there was a lot of uncertainty about who was going to win that election. And I think that there's always some relief in a conclusion. And I think a lot of people were afraid you were going to have some kind of a hanging Chad scenario again, or, you know, possibly having to go like a long period of time before you actually got a clear cut result. So I think that when you finally got the result and it seemed to be definitive, I think that was a positive step. I also think there was a revelation, you know, that Trump was not going to go after the bankers in the way that they had feared that Hillary with Bernie Sanders and Warren on her team, you know, had made concessions to them to get them to back her. And their concessions had demanded there would be more robust prosecution in the finance sector. I think when a Trump victory was revealed, there was a sigh of relief in the finance sector. I mean, we know for sure bank shares in the U.S. have rallied just over 13% in just the last 2 weeks. Yes. That's actually the sector that has led the S&P higher since Trump came in. So there's no question there's been a relief rally in the banking sector. And I think that that is a warning sign, frankly, to pro-Trump people or those hoping that Trump will deliver on change that he promised in his campaign. I think they should be very diligent in watching what's actually happening here, because, you know, his first speech was conciliatory in general, which was fine. That was trying to calm the anger and, you know, divisiveness of the campaign. That was fine and statesmanlike. But his 60 Minutes interview, where he started trying to justify why he was picking bankers as his inside confidants and ex-Goldman Sachs people, you know, and it was put to him, hey, those are guys from the swamp that you said you were going to drain. And his excuse, I think, was very weak, Kerry. He said, well, you know, you have to pick from the swamp. That's all there is. That's actually not true. So that was the first thing I sort of thought, aha, watch this very carefully here, because he sold himself as a change agent, much as Obama did in 2008. And the Democrats lost power because by the midterms, remember, because sure. They didn't do any of that. They brought the bankers right. in tighter to them. They rewarded the fraudsters. They didn't make anyone personally accountable. And I think that if Trump does the same thing, legacy is similar, he too will lose the faith of the people very quickly.
I totally agree with you. There's some things that just are not negotiable. And I think that that is certainly one of them.
Well, another thing, you know, that really stuck out to me is I remember when Obama came in on the platform of the financial crisis and round up the bankers and all that, and he didn't. And he actually said, don't worry, boys, go on home. It'll be all fine. And then everyone bailed them out.
Yes.
When Michael Lewis was writing about that chapter in that period, he said, he asked him, he said, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you go after them? You had them, their heads on a platter. Why didn't you take steps? And he said, I didn't think it was that serious or that important, or that wasn't the most pressing issue. And he failed in his leadership in missing that was actually the most pressing issue, in my opinion. And I think that Trump has now made these waffly comments about he doesn't think the American people care about conflicts of interest. He doesn't think the American people mind if he picks from the swamp. I think he's dead wrong there. And I think that if he makes that mistake, he's making the same mistake as the government before him. And I'm actually thinking, you know, this next 100 days or the next year, let's say, is going to be extremely interesting to watch, because if he makes those same mistakes, then he is espousing the same elitist doctrine that has cost the people's faith in democracy in your country. And this is in my humble view from Canada, but I think it's the same everywhere. I think it's why the revolutionary parties are uprising in Europe. It's not because someone wants right or left. It's because the people are dead sick and tired of being lied to, duped, and bamboozled while they have less and the elites take more.
Oh, totally agree. If he kowtows to the banks and becomes just a pawn, I mean, look, we saw from WikiLeaks that Citibank chose Obama's cabinet. I mean, there's not even a question about it. And then when you look at all the contributors to the Clinton Foundation and to the Clinton campaign, there was no question that she was never going to make an effort to reform the system. So, you know.
And the reform package, it's interesting, the stimulus package that he did his YouTube video, Trump, there yesterday to talk about what he was going to do by executive order within the first 100 days. And interesting, again, there, nothing was talked about in terms of going after, fraudsters or financial criminals. Mm-hmm. It seems like the stimulus spending, the $1 trillion package that was proposed, seems to be already getting significant. Watered down. So, you know, you got to be, I think people are going to hold him accountable. And I really
I hope so.
They do, because I think enough
Everyone
of this, you know, enough of lying and taking and cheating and pretending. Let's have some actual integrity and following through on promises.
Absolutely. Everyone should be held accountable for what they promise to do and whether they deliver or not on those promises. And I'm sure with this media, with his adversarial relationship with them, they will hold him accountable for sure, unless he so intimidates them that they just roll over like they did with Obama and Clinton. Well, with them, they were just co-conspirators. Let's face it.
Well, it's the corporate sponsor thing again, right?
Yeah.
We actually have very little independent media of any kind, even non-mainstream media on the internet. The various sources that one can go to are sponsored by a group of people that have that view.
Of course. Yeah.
That's how it works. So we don't really have this notion that there's some kind of, you know, unbiased view out there is really impossible because the way that it's structured. So I think, you know, the other thing is, frankly, I think that Trump promised a lot. I think that people in his position typically do. I don't know if he really believed in his own powers that much or if he just felt that was necessary to get the votes. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, when you look at, even if the Republicans can pass the tax cut package and the infrastructure spending package. Yeah. I think the tax cut package for many is going to be more palatable. But I mean, you've got $20 trillion of debt as he comes into office there, just on a federal basis in your country. So fiscal conservatives are not going to be crazy about this, like, let's cut revenue and spend. So even if he could get it passed, I think if you go back to 1980 in Reaganomics, even when you look at that, now that was a much bigger stimulus package in relative terms to what's been proposed here. Mm-hmm. Tax rates were already at 70%. Marginal tax rates were at 70% there, Kerry, and he was cutting them. Mm-hmm. But he also had the baby boomers coming into their peak spending hours, so years. So that was a huge demographic boost on the economy right then. And even mm-hmm. with all those, and interest rates, let's not forget, we're at 18% relative to 0.5, right? Correct. So all those things were hugely behind the wind at the back of Reaganomics. And it still took several years before the economy turned around out of the slow growth, you know, recession of 1980. So I think people have really overestimated the power of Trump as a person, and even the power of the proposals that they can afford right now, vis-a-vis where we are in the demographic cycle, where we are in the debt cycle, and in the global growth picture.
Well, let's not forget that most of what the government gets, aside from what it directly pays out to beneficiaries, gets wasted. I mean, that's just the nature of government. So if he were to look to cut stuff, you know, which I presumably will, by all accounts, they say that they're going to do it. But a lot of people have said that before. I'm always of the opinion I'll believe all that when I see it. But
he didn't want to touch entitlements either. In his speeches, he was all talking to the people on government benefits. And nobody's talking about the fact that can't be paid in its current form and promises.
Yeah. Well, his theory being, if he can grow the country fast enough, he'll be able to pay for it. I don't think that's realistic. I think those, you know, we're dealing with the leftovers from the New Deal. And now entitlements like Social Security, the biggest government program around, and Medicare have been so ingrained and so vital a part of most of your retirements out there. People cannot survive without Social Security. It's just impossibility. 85% of the population is not going to have enough savings. And with what's happening with the markets now, that number could go even higher. So,
the irony is, I think a two-term president could actually improve the growth picture considerably, say 4 years from now, if they could do the right things now, which I think includes leveling your tax code, taking out all your loopholes, restructuring many of your benefit programs, taking away subsidies from the industries that ought not to be getting them anymore.
Corporate welfare, disgusting.
Your healthcare system, you've got all the profit takers in there gouging away, and it's not
sustainable. Well, they wrote Obamacare. You know, they were the authors of Obamacare, the drug companies and the big health insurance companies.
So all these takers. If he can't get any of that done or passed, or doesn't have the convictions to do what he promised, or, you know, I know it's more than one person there, but if he can't get any of that done in the short run, which, as I'm saying, won't create growth in the short run, but it might actually set the groundwork for 4 years from now. Yep. Even the infrastructure projects that are picked, even say they get this, you know, a trillion or half a trillion bucks of infrastructure over the next 10 years, the ones that people think they want in the short run to reboost coal or something like that is going to be wasted money in the long run. They need to pick things that are smart in terms of a integrated utility web that will, you know, support green power all over the nation. They could do stuff now that will greatly help later, but they are going to be too fixated on short-termism again in goals, then they're going to find that they don't revive the economy. And 4 years from now, they'll probably get their head handed to them again in the next election.
Well, I think as far as government trying to figure out what's going to work in the future and what's not, they've been very bad at it. I mean, you just have to look at the green energy giveaway under Obama. I think the average person wants to see the bridge that they drive on, or bridges that they drive on daily, be sure that it's not going to collapse, that it's in good condition, that their roads, they don't get swallowed by sinkholes and potholes.
They have air and water they can breathe and drink safely.
Exactly. Yeah. Same thing. They want all these things, but You know, the air quality has improved dramatically in the United States over the past 50 years, and you just have to take a trip to China to understand how much.
Which you did, right?
Yeah. I mean, in China, forget it. And you can't drink the water. That's like you got bottled water in every hotel and you're in your sink, in your bathroom sink to brush your teeth with. So, you know, yeah, there's a lot of projects that need to be done. And if we focus on those basic human needs, you know, I think most
people improve the quality of life, which ultimately will appease the masses, will make them, you know, in better health. That's the kind of stuff. But, you know, it's interesting because people have been asking me about the stock rally in the past, you know, week. Mm-hmm. And does this mean we're in a new secular boom period and should they be getting in? Yeah, and it's like, that is classic turkey behavior. You know, as Taleb said, you're coming up to your Thanksgiving there and he tells the story of the turkey who, the more it's fed, the closer it gets to Thanksgiving, the more confident and safe and secure it feels, not realizing that that means they're closer to demise, not nearer from demise.
So true.
And I think that's exactly where we're at. You know, he didn't, as we've just recounted with the beginning of the Reagan boom in 1980, the conditions were completely different. Stocks had fallen to single digit PEs. Dividend yields were more than 5%. I mean, it was a completely different climate on a secular basis, on every metric. And people are just hoping because we've got a new, you know, Republican in power that we're somehow going to be in the same situation with stocks at, you know, peak bubble conditions and low yields and horrendous valuations. And I wish it was that simple. I wish just changing the leader would change the entire fabric of everything. But,
you know, the one thing about it, though, is by all rights, he shouldn't be there now. He fought everybody. All right. This is the worst, you know, from his own party. All right. He knocked off 16 of those guys like they were nothing. So from his own party and then what Hillary and her minions threw at him. So, you know, you never know. I mean, normally I'd say president doesn't matter. It's the uniparty. All they care about is big business, banks, taking care of their buddies here. But he's kind of a loner president in a lot of respects. So I'm not willing to write him off quite yet till he hasn't even picked his cabinet yet. And a lot of the people that he picks might have come from the swamp, but renounced the swamp, if you will. And I think in the final analysis, he's probably going to make the key decisions, him and his inner circle of advisors. They're going to be making the key decisions here. Day-to-day management, great delegator. Seen it up close and personal, but from standpoint of the actual policies, it's going to be all about him. But, you know, you got to be realistic here. Like, you went from a right president or premier in prime minister in Canada to a left. What really changed here in your country overnight, Daniel? Not much when you get down to it.
Well, belief in climate change. Our right-wing president's prime minister didn't believe in climate change, and our new prime minister does, which is, by the way, most of the world today.
What else changed?
But nothing else changed. Really, the truth is, and this is what we touched on at the start of this conversation, the truth is that neither party has been looking out for the working people for many, many years. The truth is that corporations are driving the bus, and I still think they are in the Trump presidency, and it'll be a surprise, a pleasant one, if that doesn't seem to be the case. But so far, I see no evidence to suggest that he's going to be any different. So I'm just saying this is how we get revolutions. This is how you get, you know, physical uprisings, because people get so tired. And that wonderful quote that, you know, people of privilege will do everything but give up privilege, even when it means their own demise. I think that's what we're watching right now.
Yeah, well, you could well be right. And like I say, I don't know what's going to happen here, and can't draw any great conclusions from who he's picked so far. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a military industrial complex president, no question about that. And he said it from the get-go. No surprises there. So there's really no surprises in terms of who he picked for defense. Pick that person yet, or he's going to the general, Mad Dog. I'm always a little wary of any guy named Mad Dog being up there in leadership roles, but maybe it's maybe you're on the battlefield, you want a Mad Dog. So defense, you know, there's no surprises there. We don't know in terms of who's going to be running Treasury yet. So we'll just have to see. Attorney General, you know, I was surprised he picked Sessions, but it's
horrified.
I'm horrified
as a lawyer that he picked him. But hey, that's your country. Good luck with it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we've got this immigration problem here that's, 2-3 million illegal alien felons. That's what he's really wants to get rid of, to drain the swamp and then allow people to enter legally. And he's going to wind up legalizing the people who are here contributing, and they'll have to figure out what to do. If we didn't pay illegal aliens welfare, all right, then there wouldn't be much of an issue, but that remains to be seen. You know, I don't see anything really objectionable about the guy.
The fact that he was too racist to be considered a judge
Stop that. You know what Democrats do when a conservative. Okay. He wasn't racist. I mean, he fought desegregation cases, got a death penalty for the guy who was in the KKK. You can't call the guy a racist just because he came from Alabama. He wasn't.
I was just going by what the panel found when he was trying to be appointed as a judge. So I didn't review the facts. But I'm just going by what they said.
Well, what they said, a lot of it was lies, like they always do when they put judges up there on both sides, and both sides lie about the judge's qualifications. The American Bar Association found him fully qualified. So, you know, that's neither here nor there. It's 30 years ago, and his record and since nobody can take issue with.
I think you're right. We don't know, and we'll give this time, and we'll watch with great interest. But I think everyone here is on a very short leash, and if the American people are smart, and I think that they are in the end. Mm-hmm. They are not going to allow this to just be lied and bamboozled again. And, this whole nonsense him saying he's putting his stuff in a blind trust, which is a legal entity, as you well know, Carrie, mm-hmm. and he isn't putting anything in a blind trust. What he's describing isn't a blind trust. And he's trying to say that no one should mind that he has conflicts of interest. I mean, this is the cesspool that we're trying to get mm-hmm. away from. This is what he ran on, trying to get away from this conflicted, self-serving, and you can't just... this is a problem that a lot of wealthy people have, is they get used to calling the shots and setting facts in their life, and they start to believe that they can say anything they want and that makes it so. And that's just not going to work. And I just don't think it's going to work here.
Well, LBJ had a blind trust. He spent 8 hours a day on his business affairs, buying up radio stations. So either the person's honest and they don't need a blind trust, or wouldn't require one, or if they're dishonest, no blind trust is going to work. But I agree with you that you can't be taking advantage of your position, whether you're Secretary of State or whether you're president, to be racking up fortunes.
Justice has the requirement that it has to appear to be done too. So it's not good enough to just say, trust me. You can't just say, trust me. We have to have some structure in place that's considered, reasonable, ethical. So, when someone starts saying, no, just trust me, you're in trouble.
Well, a blind trust isn't going to do any good in this particular instance from a purely procedural standpoint, because his kids are going to be running the show. So he puts his assets into a blind trust.
No, the only effective blind trust would be to actually sell the assets and put cash with an alternate manager. That would be an actual blind trust.
Is that the right way to go about this?
That's the way it would be. If you're going to have an actual blind trust, it would mean you'd have to sell and put the money in the hands of an exterior manager that's not coming to you for business decisions.
Years to do, Danielle. Come on, years to unwind all of his projects. It could never be done. So there's got to be some other way.
I'm just saying, if the American people go for letting someone run things with all those conflicts of interest, then good luck to them, because it's going to cost them.
I'm just saying that the type of thing you're describing, and it's less than ideal. It hasn't worked in the past with numerous presidents on both sides of the aisle. So to think that he's going to liquidate everything over the next 6 months and just put the cash in a trust is just not workable. So, and I agree that he does have to be held accountable and transparent in any action.
You always say
takes
about the light of day being the best.
I totally agree. But you just can't do what you're saying there. You'd have to have a fire sale. And it's not going to work. Plus, we're entering a recession. You force a person to sell their assets off in a recession. But anyway, so this is a wait and see. It's a work in progress. Like, I don't have the greatest hopes for any of it, because I always thought we were beyond the tipping point anyway. But it does make for good TV and good drama. And if nothing else, the public has demonstrated their appetite for that. So get ready for The Apprentice Part 2, and we'll see what happens. Anyway, visit Danielle's site over at jugglingdynamite.com, and come to us at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Okay, Carrie, good luck.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.